to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Thursday, October the 3rd, 2013. Tonight, we've got some interesting stories about whistleblowers and people who stand up to tyranny. We've got a first-person report by the InfoWars crew who went to the Utah Data Center, the brand spanking new depository of all of your information. And, of course, they got ticketed for photography, even though photography is not a crime. We also are going to have an interview with a major whistleblower. This is someone blowing the whistle on HSBC's massive money laundering that has happened even after they were put on suspension and given a slap on the wrist and told not to do it again. They're on probation, double secret probation, but this is still an ongoing thing. And we're also going to be talking about the founder of LavaBit, who shut down rather than turn over information illegally to the government's request. But the breaking story tonight is the entire country panicking. And it's kind of disgusting to see Eric Cantor congratulating the police over what appears to be the murder of a woman who fled from police after she was stopped at a barrier, had a small child in her car. Official sources are saying that she is dead. She's been pronounced dead. No idea why she ran or what initially started this. Did she strike the barrier? Was she terrorized by the police? We don't know, but it's a disturbing pattern that as brutal as the police are, and as they terrorize people, people are increasingly fleeing in terror. And then when they run away from the police see that as an excuse to shoot them. This is not something they would be allowed to do if somebody broke into your home under the Stand Your Ground law, the Castle Doctrine. If they're not a threat to you, you're not allowed to kill them. And yet the police are doing this regularly, as we saw even here in Austin, and a report that we've covered many times here at InfoWars, where a man fled the scene of a bank robbery investigation long after the bank robbery. And even though he didn't match the physical description of the robbers at all, he was chased down by a cop and shot in the back of the neck. So this is a very disturbing trend. And it's even more disturbing to see how people like Eric Cantor and to see how CNN react to this. Basically, CNN is watching this video that we just showed a clip of. And they're saying it just shows an amazing amount of training and restraint on the part of the police. They counted that it was a full 12 seconds before they actually started firing at the car that wasn't a threat to them or anybody else. I really cannot understand how the government can justify this, and many of us don't believe that it is justified. Well, it's not just the security that is phony. It is also Obama, again, engaging in his phony barricades, just like yesterday. It was pretty ridiculous when they shut down the World War II monument. It was outside. There was no reason for anybody to have to man it. And yet they put barricades out there to try to stress the fact that the government had been shut down in some critical or vital way. And yet the World War II veterans went through that in spite of the barricades. Today they went to privately owned Mount Vernon. And in our InfoWars story, they call it barricades, which is a great way to describe it. Feds try to shut down privately owned Mount Vernon. Now, Mount Vernon is the former plantation home of George Washington. It is owned by the Mount Vernon's Ladies Association, has been for 150 years. It's a private, nonprofit organization. It gets absolutely no government funding. They put up signs on their website and elsewhere say that there is no shutdown here. But the feds, in order to make a point, because they have they co-owned the parking lot with the Mount Vernon Society, they went out and put barricades over the parking lot. Absolutely uncalled for. There's no maintenance, no reason for them to barricade a parking lot because something is not being paid. They're simply trying to, and it's very transparent what they're trying to do, simply trying to manufacture yet another crisis. But it's not just Obama that is phony. It's also Boehner. Now, one of the things that's gotten a lot of people upset is the fact that they are now excusing themselves from the same health care that they are forcing on everyone else. And, of course, that really sticks in the craw of people who don't like Obamacare at all, that the Congress would exempt itself. Now, of course, they passed this not knowing that they were and their staffs were going to be put under Obamacare. As Nancy Pelosi said, they passed it and they would find out what was in it later. Well, as soon as they found out that they were in the plan, they moved very quickly to get themselves out of it. But Boehner said just the opposite. He said, why don't we make sure that every American is treated just like we are, he said. And yet at the time they found out about this, he was working with the White House, working with Harry Reid to try to get the Congress out of this health care plan. So even though he's publicly, he's saying we should be subjected to the same laws that we're forcing on everybody else, and making a point of saying that the Democrats wanted to get out of this. Obviously, there's something wrong with it. Everybody knows that if they want to get out of it. But instead, what he was doing privately and behind doors was sending messages to Harry Reid, working with his staff, even going to the extent that they concocted to have an immigration meeting. That's what they told everybody they were going to meet about, when in reality, it was about getting the Congress out of Obamacare that they don't want. But what is the real threat to America? Is it really this phony shutdown, which isn't a shutdown at all? It's really just a slowdown. We do have a debt crisis looming that is coming up on the 17th. So we're only about 2 weeks away from a debt crisis. That's the point at which they're estimating we will run out of credit. Now, the IMF head is saying that's the real crisis. That's what we really need to worry about. Of course, the bankers always want us to get farther and farther into debt. It's the same thing they do to you on a personal basis. If you're a college graduate, they immediately start sending you credit cards so they can start charging you 20, 30, 40% interest if you get behind. They do that to homeowners with the mortgages, and they do it to countries. They've had us on an interest-only loan for over 100 years, coming up to 100 years now, with the Federal Reserve and the income tax. The income tax only pays the interest on the federal debt, as the Reagan Grace Commission pointed out. So they want us to get indebted to them, and of course the IMF head is saying we need to go further into that. But on InfoWars today, we carried a story from Paul Craig Roberts, and he pointed out what the real crisis is. Just like an individual, the real crisis is the fact that we've lost our income. Why have we lost our income? We've lost our income because we have shifted jobs overseas. We've lost tax revenues. We've lost the income associated with those jobs. And, of course, as an individual, if you lose your job, you're going to eventually have a debt crisis, and that's what we see happening with our country as well. Those American jobs have been shipped overseas, and unfortunately, they're not coming back. And things like Obamacare are not creating jobs. What they're doing is they're shutting down jobs. I know many people who are friends of mine who have small businesses, they're shutting down. We see doctors who are shutting down because they can't handle the bureaucracy with this. And we see people that are now being put into part-time jobs because that's the one way that their employers can try to cope with the added costs. And yet, even with all of that, you're seeing your healthcare costs go up, your insurance costs doubling. This is something that is strangling the economy. And yet, and nobody wants it. The Congress doesn't want it. Boehner's trying to get out of it. And we see that in Louisiana, for example, Blue Cross Blue Shield said that zero people enrolled on the first day of enrollment. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana reported that not a single person enrolled in the new health care plan offered through the quote-unquote Affordable Health Care Act on its first day. Now, this is interesting because according to the paper, the company spent $60 million preparing for the October 1st rollout, but the website continued to stall on the day of the rollout. One applicant spent 5 hours and eventually gave up. Well, maybe the problem with health care is not the health care providers, but the bureaucracies of the insurance companies and the government. Looks like they're going to turn our health care service into the Department of Motor Vehicles. Well, news is broken today about the Ed Snowden case. The email provider, Lavabit, if you remember, voluntarily closed rather than turn information over to the government. And the records were unsealed today. It's now going before a court today, and they unsealed the records. And we learn that they wanted all of the web traffic to the site, not just information about Ed Snowden. And unfortunately, Wired Magazine puts it this way. They say because they were only going to provide metadata, pen register orders can be obtained without probable cause that the target has committed a crime. That is not true. It's a shame that Wired Magazine would put that out there. Metadata is still personal data, and that is not exempted by the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that some of your data may be taken without a warrant. No, none of it may be taken by a warrant. And it's great to see that this guy stood up to them. This is what he said. I have been forced to make a difficult decision to become complicit in crimes against the American people or to walk away from nearly 10 years of hard work by shutting down Lavabit. He said at the time, after significant soul searching, I have decided to suspend operations. You know, criminals like James Clapper and Keith Alexander can go free, but they can shut down people like the owner of Lavabit, but even though he may lose his fortune, even though he might lose his life, some of these whistleblowers, he still has his integrity. They can't take that away from you. You can give up your integrity, you can lose it, but they can't take that from you, and he still has that. That's far more valuable than anything that he could have had if he had caved in like all of the major corporations did. Well, coming up right after the break, the InfoWars crew goes to where the NSA is keeping all the information that they take from you illegally, the Utah Data Center.
Alex Jones here to warn you about some of the most important health information you may ever hear. I'm talking about radiation, radioactive fallout, radioactive particles contaminating the Northern Hemisphere. Conservatively, since the 1940s, the Northern Hemisphere of our planet has more than doubled its background radiation. In fact, that was before Fukushima exploded. Now the levels are going up and up and up. Fish are contaminated in the Pacific, and the FDA, the EPA, and others, they're not worried about it. They've been raising the levels of what they claim is safe radioactive particles. So after more than 2 years of research into how to protect my family, looking at all the literature, talking to the experts, across the board they agreed iodine is key, but of the family of iodine, nascent, natural, non-GMO, non-factory iodine that comes from the earth is absolutely paramount for your thyroid and other functions in the body. The literature, the research, it's there. It's not my opinion. It is admitted that iodine is essential for the health of our bodies overall, and nascent iodine is the best form. Now, we're announcing the launch of InfoWarsLife.com, and we're going to bring you scores of products over the next few years that we're researching and developing. But nascent iodine is the first product we're coming out with because it's so important, and it's also listed as a fluoride detoxer. It does so many other things. Your body needs it, and when you don't have enough iodine, forget the radiation, your thyroid absorbs the sodium fluoride and other things. Nascent iodine and InfoWars Life Survival Shield in double strength at half the cost of the leading competitors. Please visit InfoWarsLife.com today.
Well, earlier today, some of the InfoWars crew went to the Utah Data Center, and you saw this live if you're watching the Alex Jones Show, the place where they keep all your data, but you're not allowed to even photograph the parking lot. Here's the highlights from that.
And Anthony Gucciardi reporting for InfoWars.com and StoryLeak.com is at NSA headquarters with InfoWars, Weldon Henson and Josh and others from our great crew. The reason I'm not saying Josh's last name, he's worked here a while and does a great job. I don't even know if Josh wants his full name on air. Some of our folks like to stay incognito with the NSA as if the NSA doesn't already know. Big Brother, they are now arriving at the base. They have army bases. You can see the guard towers in the live feed there to keep the slaves out and keep the criminal operation going. They also use it to spy on drug dealers that aren't paying their cut. That's come out in the Associated Press years after we told you. There's the military base on the edge of the giant NSA command base. Anthony, closing comments on the phone before we flip over to your live feed.
Exactly. So we're now right up here on the NSA data center. As you've seen on the live feed, you can see the military outpost, the tower, the data center itself, which is massive. And this entire time, the last three, 4 minutes we've been talking, we've been driving along the outskirts of this massive Eye of Sauron. This gate you're seeing right now, if you're watching live at InfoWars.com, this live stream, we're going to approach the NSA and talk about the fact that they are completely spying on us, but we can't actually document them through the First Amendment.
This is the official live feed. We are now entering the NSA back. We're going to go into the military establishment, but we couldn't resist. There's so many signs here saying, do not go in here, essentially, or you'll be arrested. No filming whatsoever. This is complete surveillance state on us, all these cameras. Yet, we're not allowed to even film with an iPhone, which is what we're using right now.
That's because they're committing crime.
So here's the
inside.
They said we couldn't get in the parking lot. Everyone told me there's no way you're going to get in the parking lot. You will be arrested before you even set foot in the parking lot. Here we are, the NSA data center parking lot. They're just staring at us. Maybe it's because Maybe they're fans of the show and they heard and they're waiting for us, but
should we maybe go over there and
they are staring at us like we're some type of goblins or something.
I need to turn the cameras off.
Yep. Listen, they're calling in their buddies. They're about to cameras right now.
Well, just keep the live feed rolling. It's First Amendment.
Hey, we're saying we're on live feed, First Amendment. We're saying First Amendment. We just want to ask some questions. We're just trying. We're live streaming right now to, on Alex Jones Show. Hey, excuse me. Hey, he cut the live feed.
These guys love to scare Americans. They love to try to intimidate everybody.
They're taking the cameras. They're taking the cameras right now.
There you go. National incident. You can't pull up in a parking lot.
Listen.
Okay. In America.
Okay. All right.
There you have the NSA people grabbing the camera. At a parking lot on the edge of the base.
We're live on air right now. Okay.
Yeah, tell them what they did to you off air, threatening you with dogs and stuff.
So they took the cameras, turned off all the stuff, and then we're standing there. And I'm saying you're not deleting the content. I'm not allowing you to delete the content. We will leave. And he's like, no, it's illegal under CFR, whatever. And we called you live on air, and you looked it up. It's not even what it says at all. They have no idea. It's not even the right one you referenced, and he has no idea. So we just kept saying, that's not even true. You're lying to us. You're not telling us the truth. It's completely fake. And he was like, no, it's not. I know the law. I'm a lieutenant of the NSA. And I said, are you going to arrest me if I don't give your ID? He's like, maybe. And then he's like, I got a dog. And I'm like, it's really almost funny how pathetic it was.
If you are the ordinary person, and you start seeing a bunch of headlines saying, U.S., Big Brother, looking down on you, collecting telephone records, etc. Well, understandably, people would be concerned. I would be, too, if I wasn't inside the government.
Well, coming up right after the break, we have an extended, in-depth interview with HSBC whistleblower Everett Stern. He's going to talk about the phony war on drugs, the phony war on terror, corrupt money laundering by banks, and a government that's so corrupt it says these banks are too big to jail, even when this stuff comes to light. So stay tuned right after the break for this very important interview.
Alex Jones Channel is the official page of the InfoWar. But don't miss what's happening on our other channels. The InfoWarrior, with the week's best videos. Prison Planet Live, where Paul Joseph Watson gives his expert analysis. And keep up with the rest of the InfoWars crew on our other pages. All of our videos are available to repost for educational purposes. See the sidebar of the Alex Jones Channel for the subscription links. And remember, you can always find our videos in the highest quality by becoming a member of PrisonPlanet.tv.
InfoWarsStore.com, a conscious and involved distributor of independently made products that support a healthy and aware community. Dive into cleaner waters with your own ProPure system and Pro1D filter. Save 10% with the promo code WATER. We've handpicked a veritable treasure trove of the best non-GMO seed banks on the market. And our selection of films showcases a wealth of knowledge outdone only by our books. Check for combo packs to multiply your savings. Wear your colors proudly with one of these conversation starters. Now available in pink. Get prepared and fund the revolution at InfoWarsStore.com.
Now you can watch Alex Jones live at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
You can also browse the network, the InfoWars Nightly News,
and over 60 movies and documentaries all together in one place.
You can watch the Alex Jones Radio Show live as it happens.
So check it out, InfoWars.com/show.
Well, if you're a follower of InfoWars, you know that we use the term banksters all the time. Gangster banks. And tonight we have a story that I think you're going to find very interesting. If you remember back in March, we had Eric Holder's Justice Department say that they weren't going to prosecute HSBC for money laundering. They were only going to give them essentially a slap on the wrist, a very small fine, no jail time, no personal fines to anyone involved there. And everyone interpreted that as essentially saying that they're too big to jail. Tonight we're going to talk to Everett Stern, and he's going to draw some connections there. We already know that our government created Al-Qaeda under the Carter and Reagan administrations. We already have Democrats and Republicans like Kucinich and Paul and Cruz who are saying that we're acting as Al-Qaeda's Air Force. We already know that our government is providing money and arms to al-Nusra in Syria, which is a designated terrorist organization affiliated with Al-Qaeda, and we're going to see now how that works on the banking side. And we're going to see how our own government refuses to enact these laws against those they consider to be too big to fail. So joining us tonight is Everett Stern, HSBC whistleblower. Welcome to the show, Everett. Thank you for speaking out and telling people about the corruption that you've seen there. It's really necessary for us to have people in all these organizations, whether it's a bank or whether it's a government organization, to speak out when they see something wrong. Tell us when you joined HSBC.
Hi, and again, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate you guys trying to get the story out. I joined HSBC October 18th of 2010.
Okay, now this is after the period of time that the alleged activity took place. Well, it's actually not alleged. They admitted that between 2004 and 2010, this is a statement from their chief executive, Stuart Gulliver. He says that they had anti-money laundering controls, should have been stronger and more effective. We failed to spot and deal with unacceptable behavior. It's right that we're held accountable, that we have responsibility for fixing what went wrong. So in that context, what did they change in 2010 that you were a part of?
They created a sham anti-money laundering compliance program. Gulliver is a, he's a criminal, and I'll say that, and I don't care if he sues me, because it's true. What happened was that when I came in 2010, this was when the cease and desist order was on HSBC to fix up the problem, and I was part of the crew that was the solution, to, fix all of the problems that HSBC was having in their compliance department.
Yeah, that's right. He said they were going to make it stronger and more effective, so they hired you. What experience did you have in anti-money laundering compliance?
None. And the thing is that before I joined HSBC, I was a candidate for the clandestine service, but they didn't know that, and that did not make me any better of an anti-money laundering compliance officer. What I did was, when I got there, I literally went to the University of Delaware because the anti-money laundering facility was in Newcastle, Delaware, and I checked out a whole bunch of books on money laundering, and I just get up early in the morning and stay up late at night, and I taught myself money laundering. That's how I pulled it off.
But did any of the people that you're working with, did any of them have any experience in money laundering compliance?
No, I'm not even sure many of them have college degrees. I mean, we had maybe 15 compliance officers in the whole department. And what HSBC did and what Gulliver did to show the government that there was this, massive compliance program that was created was they sold off their credit card division to Capital One. And which led to the firing of hundreds and hundreds of debt collectors and customer service reps. And then they just rehired them as anti-money laundering compliance officers and had them approving transactions, which is crazy.
Wow. Wow. Now.
So they went and they showed the government, look, we now have hundreds and hundreds of anti-money laundering compliance officers, and the whole thing's a sham. Not only that, they also set up operations in Sri Lanka, which you can go on, you can go online, you can see that there's jobs being posted for Sri Lankan anti-money laundering officers, and ironically enough, HSBC considers Sri Lanka to be a high-risk money laundering country, and they also set up outsourcing in India to handle the approving of American transactions, which is also crazy.
Well, now, and to talk about money laundering, these organizations that we're talking about that were being watched are organizations like Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, drug organizations like the Zeta Cartel, Sinaloa. These are major drug operations, major terrorist organizations that you guys were supposed to stop money from being transferred in and out to those locations, correct?
That's what we were supposed to do, but that's not what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So tell us what it was like there. So you come in and you don't have any experience. The people that are with you don't really have any experience in this. What was a typical day like there?
It was brutal. It was because it had multiple backlogs of alerts. So management, all they cared about was just closing as many alerts as possible, because if an alert or an investigation went beyond 30 days, then it could be escalated and the regulators could be notified. So we had to get rid of them.
What was an alert? Give us a breakdown.
Sure. So an alert, they had a system called AMS, which was the alert monitoring system, and then they replaced that with NORCOM, which was a web-based application. So let's say you go and you wire money to myself to Saudi Arabia, you know, a high-risk country, that would trigger an alert. And that alert would then go to an anti-money laundering compliance officer who would determine, you would conduct the necessary due diligence and would determine whether or not there's enough factors there to mitigate the risk, to approve the transaction, or to report it to the Treasury, to escalate it into a SAR, which is a suspicious activity report, which gets filed with the Treasury Department.
Let me stop you right there, because we got to take a break, and we're going to be right back after the break, and we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about the remarks that were made that were essentially summed up as HSBC was too big to jail, and that was back in March. So we'll be right back with that interview. We'll stick around after the break. We're going to have the rest of this interview. Now, Prison Planet TV subscribers get everything. They get it right away live that night, and they're going to get the rest of this interview. You can share this with 10 people at a time. That's it for tonight's broadcast. We'll be back weekdays at 7 Central.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.
Well, welcome back. We're going to continue this interview with Everett Stern, HSBC whistleblower, and understand the background in this. This is a money laundering scandal that one of the world's largest banks, HSBC, was involved in. And when the investigation was completed and the Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer said in March what was going to happen, people were pretty amazed at the light treatment. And this is what Lanny Brewer said. He said, HSBC would almost certainly have lost its banking license in the U.S. The future of the institution would have been under threat and the entire banking system would have been destabilized if he hadn't gone lightly on them. And people kind of summarize that remark as they're too big to jail. And I think that's an accurate summary of that. We saw the same type of treatment from the same Justice Department with the LIBOR scandal. He said, our goal here, same person talking, Lanny Brewer said, our goal is not to destroy a major financial institution. Yes, their goal is to make sure that these banks keep going no matter what laws they break. And we have with us today Everett Stern, and we're going to continue this interview. Everett was just telling us about the coming on as part of their compliance after they got caught in 2010. This pronouncement that didn't happen until 2013 was really reflecting back on the things that had happened prior to your coming to HSBC. They hired you and a lot of other people that had absolutely no background in money laundering, and we were just talking about what was happening there, how they were looking for money being transferred to terrorist organizations, to drug organizations. Continue on with that story, Everett. Tell us what you were seeing. How did you find some of these transactions that were coming up? Because they had an automated system that wasn't working very well, right?
No, I mean, it was criminal manipulation of the wire filter. So what happens is that OFAC lists names of people that we can't do business with, such as Hamas, Hezbollah, the Tajin brothers, different terrorist organizations, drug cartels. So what HSBC was doing, these geniuses, I guess you could say, they were putting dots and dashes in the codings of the payments. So the payments, the names wouldn't match with the name in the wire filter, so the payments would go through. And I saw that. I caught that. I figured that out.
Let's give an example of that. There's one in the Reuters article. There was a real estate concern that was connected with Hezbollah, and it was spelled T-A-J-C-O, but it was in the database as T-A-J-C-period-O. Now, that's not a typo. Correct. A period is not anywhere close to the characters C or O, and it's an extra character. So they would put extraneous characters in there that they thought people might not notice, like a period, and that would keep that from popping up into the automated search software, correct?
Correct, and it would allow the payments to go through. And HSBC did another good move here, is that they hired the former counterintelligence agent for the FBI. He was a top counterintelligence official, and he was the director of AML and was in charge of this department. And he knew the inner workings, and he knew what was going on. And I'm not going to say his name, but he knows who he is. And if I can just make a quick side comment to that, I think he needs to go back to the academy because I certainly got past his counterintelligence for about a year. because the thing is, that's why I never went to the FBI initially. I went to the FBI much later. Once I left.
How long did you work there before you left? Or before, did you leave and then go to the FBI?
Yes, but I was spying on HSBC for a year.
Okay.
So when I got there on October 18th of 2010, my first email to the CIA was in November. So 3 weeks in, I started passing information to the CIA, and I was doing that because, again, the candidate for congressional service, so I felt, these transactions were national security issues that involved foreign entities. The CIA needed to be notified. And, to be perfectly honest, I felt that the FBI was compromised. They had an FBI guy in there. I was a little nervous.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back and emphasize again that you came in after they had already had a major scandal. From 2004 to 2010, there had been a 334-page report put out by the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations the summer before. And then in March, they did their Too Big to Jail. But all this stuff that you're talking about, these are all things that happened after 2010, after they said that they cleaned up their act, and after they are now on probation. So they basically, one of the conditions of getting that slap on the wrist fine that they got, and nobody going to jail, nobody getting fined personally, one of the conditions of that was that they were going to clean up their act, that they were going to stop doing this sort of thing. So all these things that you see happening there, the deliberate deliberate sabotage of the names, like we saw with that Tajco, you saw that happening after 2010.
Yes, absolutely. We were brought in to fix the problem, and what they used to fit the Band-Aid that they used to fix the cease and desist order was to commit even more fraud and to put our troops in harm's way. And HSBC literally has the blood of American soldiers on their hands because those debt collectors and customer service reps that they now have approving major wire transfers, international wire transfers, they are killing soldiers and Americans with the click of a mouse. It's just that simple. And that's why This is not a normal banking scandal. This is very, very different.
Now, you worked there, you said, a little over a year. Then you went to the CIA. You were sending information to the CIA because you were concerned about somebody that was with the FBI that was overseeing this that you thought was compromised. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, I did not want to go to the FBI at that time. So I just was gathering as much information as I could throughout the year, and I just kept passing it on to the CIA.
Okay. Tell us what happened when you brought some of these compliance reports before some of your supervisors. You did that while you were there. What was their reaction when you did that?
Oh, I mean, I wrote an email, and this went to United States Congress and to the FBI, and called compliance error, where numerous debt collectors and customer service reps were approving wires going into Gaza, and I just needed to notify management that Hamas, which controls Gaza, is a terrorist organization. And I was threatened to be fired over that email. They said we're under a cease and desist order. You can't put that in writing. You can't, I mean, you know, and all transactions approved. I mean, in another example, like, I went to management. There was a fruit company in Saudi Arabia, in a Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, called Sharbity Fruit.
They love to use these fruit companies. You can go back and look at the history of United Fruit and CIA. They love using fruit companies. It's like they use the same cutout techniques over generations. But go ahead. I'm sorry. So it's a Saudi Arabian fruit company.
Yeah, so the Saudi Arabian fruit company, Sharbity Fruit, they were sending millions and millions of dollars to this PEP, which is a politically exposed person, in Yemen. And I was very concerned about this because it didn't make any sense. And so I researched them, and it turns out that he was a political member of the Muslim Brotherhood and running for office. And this was a major, major concern, which needed to be reported to the government. I mean, all transactions approved. I mean, you know, the whole focus of an AML program or an anti-money laundering program is to generate SARs, which is a suspicious activity report, which goes to the Treasury Department, so the Secret Service and Treasury can invest and the FBI can investigate. The problem is that a SAR takes a long time to write, and HSBC had a situation where there was such a backlog they did not have time for SARs. So instead of facilitating a culture of wanting to help and stop criminal activity by generating SARs, they produced a culture of just clearing alerts and no SARs. So they did an opposite game, and that's what's criminal, and that's what's they defrauded the American public.
Well, I think that they've done this so many times, and they continue to do it. I think maybe there might be something more than just expediency involved. We had a situation that you reported on in one of the articles. They said in one case, a contractor wanted to find out why 13 parties had wired a total of $1.3 million into an HSBC account in Hong Kong on the same day. And basically was just told, don't worry about it. When you reported this, in another article, it says that you reported this to Jeff Kraft, supervisor, yes. And he said, are you effing out of your mind? I should fire you right now, when you talked about money being wired to Hamas. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was in regards to the a compliance error email that was sent to Jeff Kraft the FBI guy who was above him. Jeff threatened to fire me over that. I mean, Jeff was definitely not a friend, I'll tell you that right now.
And, of course, Hamas has been designated as a terrorist organization by the government since 1995. But then, of course, our own government in Syria is supporting, arming, financing Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria at this very moment. And, of course, they have also been designated by our government as a terrorist organization. But let's continue back on with your chronology here. So you're at HSBC. This is after the events that they just got these slap on the wrist for, from 2004 to 2010. You see that they're not only not really doing due diligence here, but you see evidence that there's deliberate sabotage in the process by putting people in places, changing the names slightly, putting periods in them. So who do you go to at this point? Have you left at this point, or are you still there?
No, I'm still there. And the thing is that, currently in this current duration I left, up in 2011, I stayed there for a year, and I amassed a massive, massive case against them.
So after a year and you get all this data together, what did you do at that point? Did you go to law enforcement? Did you go to the media?
FBI counterintelligence guy was fired for sleeping with staff and creating false positions. Kraft was also fired. I then went to the FBI. I went to the Philadelphia FBI field office on 600 Arch Street and had about a four-hour interview with them in which I went over all the evidence, everything. I told them who I sent some documents to within the CIA. And
this is 2000. This is 2011?
Yes.
That you're going to the FBI, okay.
And then the press came in. Initially, I was hesitant to do anything with the press, and the FBI was very nervous about it for security reasons, of course. But I felt that if I didn't put my name on this, and if I didn't make the American people aware, then nothing was going to happen. So I needed to take that risk, and I explained that to the FBI, and they said they thought I was nuts, but they respected what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Reuters article came out, and the Senate hearing started, it was interesting because I was on Capitol Hill a couple weeks ago. Congresswoman Maxine Waters saw the American Banker article and saw one of my speeches in New York, and I was invited down to speak to her. From my understanding, Eric Holder was approached to reopen this case.
Well, I find it interesting because now when they closed this case and they announced the results of it, in March of this year, that's 2013. Now, they were already investigating all this fraud that had happened up until 2010, but you went to the FBI in 2011, two years before they closed this investigation, and you told them this stuff is still going on, and they still gave this slap on the wrist to HSBC and said, don't do it again, you're on double secret probation.
The FBI, what my lawyers have argued is that my evidence was not included in that $1.9 billion fine. They were not prosecuted under consideration for anything that was part of my evidence, and a new investigation needs to be opened up. And what Congressman Maxine Waters asked Eric Holder was, why are you ignoring Everett Stern's evidence? And I think that's what's key here is that this evidence that we have is it's not made up. I mean, this is factual stuff and transactions, and I mean, it's there. So why not investigate? And I mean, if we have a foreign bank sponsoring terrorism on U.S. soil, I would think that concerns the country.
So why do you think that the Justice Department ignored what you had when they put this case together? The information that you'd given to the FBI at that point was a year too old, and they didn't include that in their investigation. They ignored it. They pretended that everything had been fixed in 2010. Why do you think that's the case?
Because the evidence that they had before was very general. My evidence was very specific, and my evidence would shut down the bank, and it would send people to jail, and it would do exactly what they don't want to have happen. Which they just wanted to go away, and I think where the administration, I'm a conservative Republican here, and I do have respect for the president, of course, it's the president of the United States, but I think the administration is making an error because I understand that they don't want to cause another financial crisis by shutting down the bank, but I can guarantee you that if they sponsor the next 9/11, that there definitely will be a financial crisis. So So I think it's a double-edged sword here. I think, you know, from a national security standpoint, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that I can't bring nail clippers on an airplane, but we can allow a bank to sponsor terrorism. I don't get that.
It seems like it's not just our bank, but it seems like it's our government working with these banks. It's one of the reasons why the people, there's a lot of good people, a lot of honest people at HSBC, at the FBI, at various places that see these laws being broken. But even if they do a prosecution, it gets shut down by the corrupted officials at the top, as we see with the Eric Holder Justice Department. So it seems like it's the people at the top. There was evidence when this was going on in 2006, even though the OCC was investigating this, George Bush let HSBC go. So this is not something that is even corruption that's limited to Obama or Eric Holder. This is something that they got off the hook by the Bush administration as well, didn't they?
I believe so. I mean, it's an ongoing issue, but I think the message needs to be sent that we're not going to stand for this.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to understand that, you know, for instance, you know, there were hundreds upon millions of dollars moving from Kariba supermarkets in Gambia to Tajiko in Beirut, which is owned by the Tajin brothers, who are the financiers of Hezbollah. And that money is going towards, you know, IEDs to blow off our soldiers' legs and everything. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, it's just they have to be shut down. And the message has to be sent that America stands, you know, for ethics and America stands for justice. And this is not justice.
Well, I think there's pervasive corruption in the banks as well as the government. Geraldo Rivera went to Afghanistan and took pictures and interviewed soldiers who are guarding poppy fields, who are loading heroin onto planes. This is something that after our government went into Afghanistan, their percentage of the world supply went from 10% to 90%. So we've got the U.S. government at high levels that is involved in the drug trafficking. So it makes absolutely perfect sense to me that they would not be interested in shutting down the money laundering operations of some of these largest banks, that they would basically be held captive by these banks, controlled by these banks. But talk to me about what you saw when you went to the media. Tell us who you went to in the media that didn't run these stories.
Yeah, so immediately 60 Minutes was interested, and Brian Ross with ABC News was interested. Brian Ross said, "We'll get you on tape immediately. We'll have it out within 2 weeks. Don't go with 60. So I went ahead and went with Brian Ross, and we did a whole interview. I even posted the pictures on Twitter to remind him. This was last year, Brian Ross said to me, he said, "Everett, this is a great interview. We're going to air it within 2 weeks," and you never aired it. I mean,
it's been an entire year, and they haven't aired the story. They've spiked it.
Right, and what happened was, you know, I said to him, I said to Brian Ross, "How do you look yourself in the mirror? You promised me this was going to air. This is a national security issue." And he said his hands were tied. And this was a legal issue. The same thing happened with the BBC. I interviewed with the BBC. They said they didn't want to get sued. So, you know, these larger media outlets, even though this is a credible story,
this is why the larger, quote-unquote, larger media outlets are losing their credibility. I like to call them corporate media. It's not mainstream media. It's corporate media. And they're not telling the truth. They spike stories. They're part of the same corrupt system that extends from these banks to the government to the large media organizations. There's about five major corporations that control what are considered to be the prestige media, what many people like to call the mainstream media. As I said, they're just the corporate media controlled by five major corporations.
Right. I mean, the thing is, you know, Brian Ross is doing stories here on who stole the TSA stealing iPads at the airport, but he's not doing the story, you know, about me, you know, going after HSBC and them sponsoring terrorism. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, if they're stealing trillions of dollars and moving that around under the wire, when they've got their phony war on terrorism. And their phony war on drugs. I got to say, both the war on drugs and the war on terrorism in our opinion, as we've documented over and over again, are simply facades for a takedown of our civil liberties, for a takedown of the Constitution. It's put in there by the same group of corporations and banks that are running this government. Well, thank you, Everett, for talking to us. Before we leave, tell us what's going on in your personal life at this point. I'm sure that it was difficult for you to blow the whistle every time somebody does the right thing. It seems like there's a price to pay. We appreciate you doing that. But tell us what price you had to pay for blowing the whistle on this.
No, it was very hard. I mean, I lost everything. I mean, it was, I could not find work. You know, my parents were... gave me every last penny that they had so I could survive. And actually what saved the day was, you know, the Rolling Stone article when I was featured in Rolling Stone. Matt Taibbi was great. I do have to say Rolling Stone did a great job. And what ended up happening was that I had $20 in my bank account. And so I went down to P.F. Chang's and I showed the manager my photo in Rolling Stone. And I said, look, I'm a whistleblower. I need help. The guy went home, did his research, and called me the next day and said, hey, look, you know, looks like you did the right thing. We'll hire you. I know you're not going to be here probably in 3 or 6 months, so you'll probably be off to better things, but you serve the country. We'll help you.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah, I will never forget that. Now, I went to working from a Chinese bank to a Chinese restaurant.
Everett, you did not lose everything. You kept your credibility, and you kept your integrity. And that's the most important thing. You know, you may have lost money, but to keep your integrity and to keep your idealism when you see this kind of corruption, that's what we need from people who witness this, especially people in law enforcement. There's so many good people who see this. It's very easy to get cynical. It's very easy to say, well, everybody knows about this, and I'm just going to go along to get along, and I'm just going to feather my nest by going along and being part of this corrupt system. But the people that we're all indebted to are the people who say, no, I'm not going to be a part of that. I'm not going to just go along with that. I'm going to speak out. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to tell other people, because you know as well as I know, the vast majority of Americans care about this. They don't want to see this happen. They don't want to just wink at corruption. They want to see it exposed. It's getting by because most people, I think, it's not because people are apathetic. I think it's because they're ignorant.
No, and I agree. And if I could just say that, you know, the reason why I mentioned the P.F. Chang story is that I'm not working there anymore. I mean, I'm doing well now. I'm the CEO of my own, started my own intelligence and anti-fraud company.
Tell us about tacticalrabbit.com. That's what you're doing now. Give yourself a plug there. What are you doing now?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I've taken the military-style intelligence gathering methods that I used at HSBC, and I'm applying them to everyday business and consumer protection. So we're helping people with fraud. We're going up against banks, mortgage fraud. We're fighting banks for people. I'm just trying to help. It's one thing my dad always said. He's like, you know, Everett, just help people and the money will come along with. And,
that's right.
And if I could just circle back to P.F. Chang's again, and I'm sorry to, mm-hmm. I just want to say I had family members who wouldn't even help me. And to have them, I had no waiting experience, nothing. To have that guy, you know, if I could just say, you know, Mark Barniak at the Plymouth meeting, P.F. Chang, say to me, you did the right thing, we'll give you a shot. And they treated me so nice there. That's the only restaurant I'll ever eat at now, to be honest with you.
That's great. That's good to know. Well, you know what? As an employer, I can say that when somebody's got integrity, that is something that you can't train somebody about. If someone has got integrity, they'll be a good employee. If they don't have integrity, they'll never be a good employee. They'll just be a good thief or a good manipulator. So I can understand him doing that, but it's great that he did the right thing, too, and I think a lot of people will. Thank you for speaking up. Thank you for keeping your integrity. Thank you for warning everyone about what's going on, these criminal actions that we see happening in banks, and the overlooking of these criminal actions that we see our government just giving them a pass and saying, I'm sorry, they're so big that they're above the law. That's essentially what our Justice Department is saying about banks now.
Yeah, and again, if your listeners would definitely follow me at Stern Everett on Twitter and help me, fight the fight. I would appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, Everett. Everett Stern, tacticalrabbit.com. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. We all owe a debt of gratitude to Everett Stern, people like Edward Snowden, who, when they see something that is illegal, that is criminal, they will take the personal hit to come forward and to let the rest of us know about it. That's what's necessary. And this is an important interview for you to pass around to other people, to show them the kind of corruption that we're talking about in big banks, in big government. It's information that people need to know before they can do something about it. Most of the population is asleep. I don't think they're apathetic, so help wake people up with this. And as he pointed out, when he went to the corporate media, as I like to call them, they're not mainstream, they're corporate. They're corporate controlled. People like NBC, people like the BBC, they don't put this information out. They spike these stories. We like to call ourselves the authentic media because we're going to tell you what's out there to the best of our knowledge. When we see a story like this, we're going to try to get it to as many people as possible. You can help do that with Prison Planet TV. Get a subscription. Give it to 10 other people. All of you can watch it simultaneously. It's a great way to get the information out. We're not going to spike stories like this, stories about criminal activity. So help support the operation. And join us again every weekday at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.